everybody. Welcome back to Mystery Crate. You're listening to Dad Pod, our Father's Day series. We talked to Katie Nolan in our first episode, and now we are talking to Randy Scott. And right now, the one person who is talking is Roy Bellamy, and the guy next to me over here is Chris Cody. Say hello, Chris.
Hello, Roy. This is so exciting. We have an official series, Roy. Like, me and you, we have a thing.
Yes, we do. I never expected to have a series, but wow, I'm giddy.
Now, I'm actually genuinely excited about this. I didn't get the feedback on Twitter and on social media the way I kind of expected. Like, I was just expecting it to the floodgates to open and us to just get showered with love. But the more I thought about it, I'm proud of these conversations we're having. And that is the most important thing. More than the accolades and the appreciation and the feedback, we are putting out, I think, good content, and that makes me happy.
Yeah, it always feels good to hear what other dads are talking about with their children, like Randy Scott, who we're about to talk to today.
What I remember most about this conversation is how his relationship with his dad has gotten better. It wasn't always great when he was growing up, but him becoming a father has improved his relationship with his father. We get into some laughs as well, but that was the most memorable part, I think, of the conversation for me.
Yeah, that's right. And I really found it interesting what he had to say about delivery day, the day that his first child was born. I really thought that was interesting. So Dad Pod continues as we talk to Randy Scott.
Here we are, Roy. We are finally here. We are talking to fathers. It's Father's Day. Well, Father's Day is right around the corner. And I'm excited to talk to people about their experiences with their father and being a father. We're talking to Randy Scott. Randy is the father of two children. Randy, how old are your kids?
So I have three.
It's a great start by Chris right there. Just like knowing the amount of kids.
Selling me short. No, so we have Jack, who is in first grade and heading into second. Emma's heading into kindergarten, and our little guy is about to turn three, Ryan. So yeah, we got three of them, man. We're in the middle of it for sure.
Before we get into your relationship with your kids, how would you describe the relationship? And when I say Father's Day, your relationship with your father?
Man, so my relationship with my father has gotten a lot better really since my kids were born. It was never contentious. It was never, for, you know, extended periods of time, we butted heads a few times, but it's never a toxic relationship at all. My dad's a military guy. I mean, not anymore. He's on the plus side of 75 years old, but he was a military career, military man. He was, went to the Naval Academy and became a naval aviator. He's a fighter pilot. He flew at Top Gun and he flew the Blue Angels. And I think from some age way back, he probably thought that all of his sons were going to follow his footsteps. And, you know, his dad was a Marine. His dad fought in World War II and at Guadalcanal, and it's the family business until my generation and my brother's generation, my younger brother. And, so I was being the oldest, I was the one to sort of break that, cycle. And that was where he and I would butt heads. It was sort of a lack of communication where, you know, he thought I was going to follow orders, so to speak, you know? And I was like, I bruise like a peach. I don't take direction well. I would talk back too much and be sarcastic, and I'd be a liability if I was ever in charge of someone's health and safety, in a military capacity. And like, we had these conversations, and I have to this day the utmost respect for the military and for their families. I appreciate what, spouses do to sort of hold down the fort on the home front. And I'm not saying my dad doesn't, but that was where he and I would butt heads. Otherwise, it was a decent relationship. He eventually became an airline pilot when he went into the Naval Reserves. When he would go to work, he'd be gone for, you know, days, plural. There was no 9 to 5. So there was a lot of missing him, but there was also a lot of, like, getting used to life without him. So then when he would come home and the military side would come out and he'd want to enforce a different curfew or enforce a certain set of household rules on my siblings and I, there would be some, you know, bucking against that. And I say all that to say that our relationship now, since he became a grandfather 7 years ago, is better than it's ever been. And I think it's sort of his way to almost hit the fatherhood reset button and be able to be the dad that he either always knew maybe he should have been, maybe always knew that he could have been and wanted to be, but felt like, you know, when you're a guy who's accomplished so much as he did, he thought, listen, this is how I was raised and I turned out great. So this is my responsibility to raise my kids a certain way. And we've come a long way, he and I. And I think almost made privy to information that, yeah, maybe you're old enough to handle, but you're not ready to handle because it's still your parents. And not that there's ever a good time for a divorce to happen in a child's life. And I think people enter into that too casually and don't appreciate or understand the lasting impacts that that has. I don't know if either of your parents are divorced, but you know, I was 19 and it did a number on me. So in a lot of ways, I think one of my dad's greatest gifts to me was showing me what kind of father I wanted to be and sort of set me up with fatherhood goals. And a lot of them are in line with the kind of dad he was, but a lot of them aren't. And it's almost like any relationship too. You know, sometimes you date somebody or you marry somebody or whatever it is. And sometimes the greatest lesson that you get out of that is what you don't want in your next relationship or marriage. And you take that with you. And that's sort of, yeah, your greatest takeaway from something like that. So that's my relationship with my dad. It's so good and healthy now. He's a one heck of a grandfather. He lives in San Diego and he comes east to the Boston area a couple times a year to see them. And now that our youngest is getting old enough to make that cross country flight, we'll bring the party out his way. But he's been amazingly present for someone who lives 3,000 miles away.
So you said some of the advice was a bit antiquated, but what do you think the best advice he's ever given you was?
That kids value things that you can't buy more than things that you can. I mean, he told me that when I was in college and I needed money for books. And it was sort of like, Dad, yeah, I get that. I appreciate you coming to visit, but like, I need these books, you know, like this is a tangible thing. But I think it was a greater lesson that I sort of viewed with nearsightedness. And the greater lesson was like your kids from the minute they're born, they want your attention. They want you present. They want you in their face, you know, not in the metaphoric sense, like they want you right there and they want you to watch what they're doing. And it goes from them being babies and you just being a blurry image until you're in within 6 inches of their face to like them being 6, 7 years old. And it's, Daddy, watch this, watch my jump, watch my dive, watch my this. And, Daddy, look at this Lego and, you know, look at this plane I built and look at this. And they'll take a day of that over the Lego set that you buy to, you know, that you get them for Christmas or their birthday, you know, like that's my dad's greatest lesson to me is like the stuff that can't be bought is the stuff that they value the most and really can't be replaced because, you know, I think that's him speaking from missing so much time with his jobs. You know, his jobs required him to be out of the house and out of the state, in some cases out of the country. And I think he, you know, knows that he can't make up for that time that he missed. No amount of money brings that back.
So being present is the most important thing in parenting. And that's pretty hard, you know, when it comes to divorce. How does one, as young as you were, you were a teenager when this happened, how does one process their parents getting divorced?
I was old enough when it happened, when they each of them told me their version of what was happening. Like I was old enough to be like, oh yeah, this doesn't surprise me. But at the same time, you realize like, I think it's a letdown. The more information you get, the more just like it's a weird feeling at any age to be disappointed in your parents or one of them or both of them. In this case, it was one or one. In my case, it was one. That's a growing up moment, whether you're a teenager or when you're even older, you're like, man, this guy that I put up on a pedestal who's fighter pilot, this and this, it's like, he's human in a very fallible way. So that's a tough thing to process, but it's also like, you know, my dad was divorced a couple of times and his brother was divorced and it's throughout the men in my family. So I was so motivated to have the, you know, the movie vision of a marriage where it's like, or the country song or any song version of a marriage where it's like 50 year anniversary and our kids and our grandkids and maybe our great grandkids are all there and we're on a porch somewhere, you know, in a rocking chair and look at us. I broke that cycle in my family. Like I was so supremely driven by that. And, you know, what I learned at 19 is something that maybe I'd forgotten over time, but that like people, no matter how you build them up, are people make mistakes and they are human and you can be let down and you can be hurt by some of the most important people in your life, people that you make plans with and build lives with. And how you choose to move forward with that. Like, I was so proud of my mom for, you know, not having a college education and going through that divorce with my dad and coming out of it with a career and building a career for herself and owning a townhouse in an area of the Washington, D.C. suburbs where that wasn't an easy thing to do. And I don't know. It was a very, like, that their divorce, like, helped form who I am now, for better or for worse.
When I say hardest you and your dad ever laughed together, is there like a memory that pops in?
Well, that was the thing. Like, when he would let his guard down. So I remember, all right, so my uncle, my mom's brother, was a flight squadron member with my dad. So they met, my mom and my dad met through my uncle Steve-O, and he was, you know, his last name was Gunn. So he was Gunner, was his call sign. And my dad's was Red. And, you know, it's not Iceman, it's not Maverick, but it's, there are still call signs from, you know, Top Gun, and they have the helmets and all that stuff. I remember we were in San Diego visiting my Uncle Steve, and he would always call my dad Red and I just accepted it. My dad had it on shirts. Like, instead of getting your initials on like a polo, he'd have R-E-D. And I was sort of rolled my eyes at it. And then I was old enough. I was feeling myself at age, what, 12, 13, being a little lippy. And I was like, Uncle Steve-O, like, I know why they call you Gunner. I was like, but why do they call dad Red? Why was his call sign Red? Because my dad, a lot like me, went gray with a quickness and went gray early. And so I know I'm setting up this joke, and I know I'm taking a risk, because the Admiral, and then he was a captain, but like, the Admiral didn't have a very self-effacing sense of humor. And my uncle bought in and played along with me and goes, well, you know, there was a time, a younger time, a pre-kids time, when he wasn't as stressed and he had a little more money and a lot more free time, where your dad had red hair and a red mustache. And I was like, well, can't you change a call sign over time? Couldn't he be gray now? Could you just call him gray? And it was like, if we were at, you know, in a sitcom, like, that's where the record skips, where it's like, you know, like, and, you know, there was enough of an audience where people had to look at him, and he caught up. Like, thank God, there was not even a delay. There was no, like, suspense. It's just people looked at him, and he was laughing, so I got to laugh. And that was one of the hardest that he and I laughed. Like, he took me to see my first comedy concert, and it was the Smothers Brothers, who were funny in the 50s and 60s. And I saw him in like 89, and like, it didn't land with me, but I remember seeing my dad laugh, so I laughed too, because this was a guy who didn't let his gray or red hair down all that much around me.
What's the most special moment that your kids had with him so far that you were able to witness?
They're not going to say that it was special, and my daughter would not have been old enough to remember it. But for me, it was, my wife and I, we only had the two. We had Jack and we had Emma, and Emma was a baby. She was probably 7 months old. And we were in Avon. We had moved to Connecticut, because for so much of my time at ESPN, like 8 years now, I lived in Massachusetts. So living in Connecticut was like, hey, I actually get to like be a local resident. And I was one of those people excited to live in Connecticut. Right. And my dad came to visit, and my wife was working that night, and I was like, I got to put the kids down. And I'm solo with two, and one of them's a baby. So it's heat up the bottle and get all that going. But I was upstairs putting Jack down, and I heard Emma start up. I could hear her start crying. And I was like, she was in a pack and play in the kitchen. And I go up and I put Jack down and I come back, and halfway down the stairs, she has calmed down. I noticed that she wasn't screaming her head off, and I come down and my dad is holding her, has picked her up, and he's 70 at this point, 71 maybe. And he's holding her and he's bouncing around with her, you know, doing the bounce. And he looks terrified. This guy that I never saw terrified much, because nothing really terrified him, right? And he looks terrified, but he's not terrified he's going to drop her. He's terrified he's going to do something that's going to start her up again. So for me, it was this like, and I'm sleep deprived, right? Because we've got a 2-year-old and a baby. I have this sort of like whoosh, like mental flashback or connection or vision where like, I can see him my age doing that with me or my sister. And I'm connecting with him on like a dad level. Like, that's probably how I look when I'm bouncing around with a screaming baby. It's like, please, but you know, let me figure out this combination of something to do tonight that will stop you from screaming and get you to go to sleep. And he's just trying to help me and prove that he's helpful and useful and here and present and attentive, and also like dear God, you know, don't let this girl start screaming again, you know? Like, so that was what I will remember that until somebody takes my memory away, but that was really special for me.
Give me the example of Randy Scott just crushing it as a dad, where you got one kid in one arm, you're hitting the microwave with your toe, and you're like, you know, you're like turning the channel with one hand. Like, give me like the example of Hercules Randy Scott as a dad.
Well, that's funny that you make, because you turn your foot into like a grabber for like Legos or toys or forks that fall or any of that stuff. So the way that my wife and I, the way our schedules worked as parents and working wise was like, I'm on the morning show at ESPN. She works evenings as a news anchor, and I work weekends. So like 3 days a week, I wake up with the kids. I get them off to school. So like, I remember Wednesdays being like waking up and giving my wife a chance to sleep in, cause she gets home at like midnight, 12:15 from work, and you know, getting up with the kids, and that like 6:30 to out the door at 7:40 time is like making breakfast as fast as you can. The breakfast order changes every day. You know, making breakfast, making sure that everybody's dressed and their teeth are brushed and they have their homework and their backpacks are full, and then get them in the car, get them to one to one school, one to the other. And then sometimes there was a parent helper day. So at the preschool, because the preschool co-ops are one of the biggest rackets in the world when it comes to preschools, because you pay a tuition and you get to work there. So you get to work there like a couple times a month where like you're, and it's not like, oh, like you come in and you only play with your daughter and it's like, you know, show and tell or whatever. It's like, no, you're going to wash the dishes in the kitchen. You're going to vacuum the carpet. You're going to sweep up the stuff. You're going to put the glue away. Like, you're like a teacher's aide, and you come out of it like respecting teachers up and down even more than you already did. But like, I don't know, man, like that's also where like you can have conversations with them. You know, that's where you can like, tell me your three favorite things about school today. And it's bup, bup, bup. And why'd you like it? Bup, bup, bup. And it's more than just like, how was your day? Fine. How'd you sleep? Great. Did you have any dreams? Yes. Like, you know, the one answer stuff that you get from little kids. So that to me is the, there's no one day of it, but like, so, okay. So then on the days where I work, that rush of like dinner, bath, bed with a 2 year old and then the 5 and 7 year old, sometimes they want to take a bath together. Sometimes they don't, and figuring out what they want to do that night and what they want to eat. That's the stuff where when I get it done and I get everybody and I get out of their rooms by 8 to 8:30, that's when I'm patting myself on the back. Like, Dad Hercules, for sure.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning with Jack here. What is the memory that you had on delivery day when Jack was about to grace us into this world?
Jack should have been born on Valentine's Day. And we went in, he was a week late, and Shannon, my wife, was going to be induced because he was taking so long and he was getting so big. So I remember sleeping on the cot. We were there from the morning of Valentine's Day, and then he was born the next morning. So they induced labor, and I mean, it was like a 24 hour, he was born a few minutes after 10 in the morning. They would come in and tell us both to try to sleep, and they put me on a cot next to her, and they would say, yeah, try to get some rest. But they had that fetal monitor band across her stomach. And every time she would move, the band would invariably like lose contact with the baby and set off the alarm. I can still hear that alarm. Like when I'm really tired, I can still hear that alarm in my head where it was sort of like a welcome to the next 18 years, rest of your life. Like, this is how you're going to sleep. This is how your sleep is going to go. It was like that indoctrination into how that was going to go. I also remember like being more involved in the actual moments of delivery than I expected, because it was like, all right, Dad, here he comes. I was like, okay, great. And then they said, grab a leg. And I was like, huh? And not the baby at all. It was not a breech situation, but like, help us, you know, but a nurse was going to hold up one of my wife's legs and I was going to hold up the other leg. And it was like, here we go. And, you all of us know that you see things that you can't unsee, in that moment. But I also remember crying like so hard and so happily that like, you know, this guy that we've been waiting on for 10, cause it is almost 10 months. Like it's like it was a 41 week pregnancy. So it's about 10 months. I don't know why I say 9 months, 10 months. You wait that long, but also like I've been telling dad jokes since I was a teenager. So like I was ready to be a dad for a really long time. And, you know, having that official human certificate of like one of your dreams coming true. I mean, I lost it. I could get emotional about it now.
Now, speaking of scary, now I'm hoping we can lean towards the funny here. When I say scariest moment as a parent, I'm praying that you don't have any genuinely scary moments. Now I'll share one with you to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. My daughter's two. Like a year ago when she first started walking, we were at like some fast food restaurant, some Wendy's, McDonald's, something along those lines. And my wife and I were kind of ordering, and it was just like a split second where we both whipped our head around and we're like, wait, do you have her? Where is she? And then like 3 seconds later, she emerges from behind some pillar. But there's just that 3 seconds of like panic where we're like, I'm beelining out the door. My wife is like about to get on a table and start, where's my kid? So like just stuff that in hindsight, it was funny. Like when I say like scariest moment, do you have anything?
The first one was when Ryan was born in 2017. I take my two older kids, Emma and Jack, to the Children's Science Museum in Boston. And there's a climbing structure in it. It's like a series of tubes and nets. And it goes like floor to ceiling, like five stories. And you can put your child in there and they can climb up and climb back down and you're good. And I put Jack in there. I put Emma in there. Emma went up a little bit, came back down. Jack stayed in. It was crowded. It was summertime. I'm walking with Emma, keeping an eye on the entrance and the exit to this climbing thing. And I see Jack come out and I'm walking over to him. He can't see me and he loses it right away. Has diagnosed himself as lost, never to be found again. So he takes off and I'm like, ooh. And so I pick Emma up and now I'm trying to weave through these crowds, keeping an eye on my son who's running away looking for help, looking for me, but looking for help. And so he ran to a museum, you know, worker and was like, I can't find my dad. And I'm like, oh my, like that, I could still feel how that hit me. I'm like 15 paces behind him, but I've got eyes on him the whole way. So he still calls that the day that he was lost, even though he was never lost and I could see him. And then the other scary one was when my oldest was born, we couldn't like hold him right away because he wasn't breathing well right away. He had come so quickly that he wasn't, I guess like contractions also serve a purpose in addition to just being like painful. They actually like squeeze the baby and kind of wake them up and get them ready to be in an environment they're not used to. And he came out so quickly that they had to get the fluid out of it. They had to like suction cup the fluid and all that stuff. So they took him up to the NICU like right away. And after two babies where you have the dream of like, hey, he or she is here, and you hold them and you get to nuzzle them and skin to skin and everything's great right away. It was such a weird, scary, terrifying feeling to hear his little cry, hear like something that didn't sound right, see the concern on the doctor's face, on the nurse's face, and then not be able to touch him. And he's just gone. And he's on a different level of the hospital like that. And you have to put on a brave face for your wife and she's wondering what's going on and you don't have any answers. You know, luckily God, you know, he's great. He was great later that day, but like that was really scary. That was really scary. That was probably the scariest of all.
Thankfully he's healthy now and he's growing and all your children are growing and eventually they are going to become adults. Unlike the three of us, obviously, but, yeah. What kind of future do you see each of your children having? What kind of, what do they like? What do you think, the careers just might be at this point in time? What do you think their careers might be?
I think my oldest is going to be a tough coworker because I think he is so set in his ways. He knows how he wants things. He has an outsized confidence for a 7-year-old. So I think that'll serve him well in so many ways, but I also pity whoever works with him at the engineering firm or at the architecture company, or I see him working with machines and involved in some way with how things work and how they're put together. My daughter is fearless. I could see her doing everything from organizing and running like an outrigging company for expedition travel. I could see her like running that and being someone who leads, you know, who is a guide on Kilimanjaro expeditions or something like that. She's fearless. I could see her working with animals. She loves animals. I could see her working with children. She loves babies and, she's like a second and third mother to Ryan. She reads at like a second grade level because she's keeping up with my oldest. So I could see her. I mean, you need reading for everything. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say there, but like, she's whip smart. She's so smart. My little guy is fascinated. I mean, as so many, I think little kids are with planes and trains and, he will take the television remote, talk into it and say trains on YouTube and it will go to YouTube, and there are people who record passenger trains, Amtrak trains, cargo trains, and just put it up for 40 minutes of this, various trains, California trains, and he knows how to find it on YouTube, and he will sit there and watch it. And you're like, how does this get 3 million views? Like, 10,000 of them are from my son, or from my 2-year-old that he fires up on his own. So I could see him being involved in like transportation or something, but I don't know, man. Like, Chris, you have one baby girl.
Yeah, she's two.
And Claire is your only child, correct?
That's right. Yep.
If you guys do have more children, you'll be fascinated by how something that is from the same two parents, a little human being, can be so different, and not in a bad way at all. It's literally like I remember before my daughter was born, I talked to my mom and she's like, you know, are you ready? You ready to have a girl? And I was like, it's not the girl thing. It's the two kids. Like, I love Jack so much and I don't know how I could love something as much as that. Like, can I do that all over again? And she's like, it's not even that. She's like, A, you will, but you'll love like different parts about them because they're going to be unique and they're going to be different and you're going to love them in a different way, but just as much. And she was right three times over.
That's got to be one of the coolest parts, actually, is like finding, oh, that's like me right there in my daughter. And that's like me from Jack. Like, that's got to be one of the cooler parts.
Yeah.
I want to go back to before the kids are born. Now, this is something that I kind of, because Randy, you know, you told the story about your dad being red. You at one point, or were you a redhead? Like, you're kind of a ginger. Like, you're tough to read on whether you're actually a ginger or not.
Well,
but so go ahead.
No, my hair color comes from a bottle now, man. I'm gray.
So, but basically what I'm getting at is with me personally, like I'm a ginger. I grew up red hair, still have it actually. And my parents, the in-laws, my wife, they wanted my daughter to have red hair because like they think, oh, it's so cute to see kids with red hair. And I was always kind of like, I don't know, I'm kind of good if she's a brunette like my wife, because I grew up and kids can be mean. So I'm wondering, like, I'm not going to say I was like, oh, poor me, I was picked on, but you know, I had times where kids would make fun of me having red hair. So I was kind of hesitant to want my daughter to have red hair because I didn't want her to go through that. Before your kids were born, was there anything from your childhood that you were like worried about for them?
Yeah, I was worried. I was worried about, for me, like, I wanted them to get height and I wanted them to get personality stuff that you try to instill over time. But I was worried that they would get like my weak ankles, my lack of speed, lack of jumping ability.
My weak, like, ankle.
Oh, dude. No, I have. So everybody has three main ligaments in their ankles. I've torn 2.5 in each side. Like,
I'm sorry for laughing.
No, it's like came down to the side of someone's foot playing basketball, came down to the side of a curb playing street football. Like, and it's like swells up like a softball. It's awful.
As your kids get older and they become teenagers, how do you tackle, you know, cause that's the toughest part. A lot of parents say, how do you imagine you're going to handle that?
It's going to be so different It's going to be so different from being a teenager myself, because I think what we talked about in terms of like what kids want is for you to be present, and the challenges that go into that, not only because of your jobs, but also because like of how we're doing this, right? This having a cell phone in your hand all the time. Like, my kids, I catch them rolling their eyes at their mom. I catch them rolling their eyes at me sometimes if we're on our phone while they're trying to get our attention. You know, if they're like, hey, like, daddy, watch this, or mommy, I need you to do this, or I need watch it, whatever it is. And we're like, okay, 1 second, as we're like sending a work email or sending off a text or whatever it is. And I think as they get older, I know as they get older, that fight is going to be flipped. I'm going to be fighting for them to be present with me. I'm going to be fighting for them to put their phone down so we can have dinner, put their phone down so I can ask them about their day, put their phone down so they can focus on something having to do within the four walls of the house, as opposed to anything that's out there, social media wise, game wise, any of that. So I see that as being a challenge that I don't think anybody truly conquers, but I see that as being a real challenge moving forward, because, you know, for us it was, and I'm older than both of you, but for us it was America Online, right? Like, and being on instant messenger too late at night or whatever, but that was sort of it. It wasn't in the palm of your hand, moving forward. So, I think, you know, pushing back on authority, I think pushing back on curfews and rules and questioning things, like, that's such a fine line, because you want your kids to be open-minded. You want them to question anything that they deem unfair. But at the same time, when we're talking about, you know, things that you feel are in their best interest to keep them safe, you eventually have to play the parent card and just be like, okay, because I said so, even though that used to drive you nuts as a teenager growing up. So it's going to be interesting to navigate it. I do think, though, one advantage I have over my dad is generational, where I know if I'm having trouble with a certain aspect of raising a teenager, I can reach out to fellow dads. I think that was frowned upon from our fathers and their fathers, certainly. I don't think you admitted weakness. I don't think you talked about parenting with other dads. And now that barrier, that societal taboo, however you want to call it, is gone. I think that I talk more to my coworkers at work about parenting than I do about sports. And I love that. Because it's sort of a vulnerability to be like, hey, you know, taught me how to blow dry my daughter's hair. Like, I couldn't navigate how to do it without like having her complain that the dryer was too close or I was burning her hair or burning her scalp or whatever. Was Nicole Briscoe. Like, Nicole was like, no, you've got to pull it back and then twist it and hold it up. I said, no, twisting, it's going to hurt. And she goes, it doesn't hurt. Not if you spray detangler in it. Like, I didn't learn that from my wife. I didn't learn that from my sister. I didn't learn it from my mom. I learned it from a coworker. I see myself responding to whatever challenges happen as they're teenagers and even preteen. Like, we go through this like series of changes that are coming to our family and to their lives. I'll be able to lean on friends. I'll be able to talk to other dads about how to be the best dad I can be and be the kind of dad that they continue to deserve.
Wow. Well, speaking for Chris and speaking as a father, this was really enlightening. And hopefully we can get some advice from you, because we need all the help that we can get. Randy, thank you for joining us today.
Love you guys. Thank you for having me.
All right. That was Randy Skye, everybody. That was really fun.
I don't feel like there's many more likable people at ESPN that we've met than Randy Skye. He's one of the few people outside of our world that I would kind of consider a friend. There's no way he considers me a friend, but I would consider him a friend. I think he's really funny. His Hack in My Days are just, I just love Randy, man. He's so cool.
Yeah, he's so likable that he's hateable. He's actually too likable.
Wow. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just like, is that me too? Because I feel like people think that I'm very joyful. Is it too much that you like hate me?
Yes, everybody hates you, Chris.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. No, everybody loves you.
Even for you, Roy, I knew you were joking when you said that, but you're like, wow, that felt too mean. I need to soften it up. I don't actually hate you, Chris.
Yeah. I wasn't talking about myself. I was talking about everybody else.
Right.
Everybody,
just the people. Yeah, Roy, I know you love me, man. Me and you, we got a thing, dude. We got something going here. Dad Pod.
Yeah. Well, if you say so. Dad Pod, you're absolutely correct. Dad Pod is going to continue. The next time you hear from us will be with Pablo Torre.
Ooh, Pablo. I love it. Should we got to do this thing again where we promote stuff? Let's probably do that.
Yes, let's promote stuff. What are we promoting? Are we promoting like South Beach Sessions or something?
I think you should listen to South Beach Sessions. This week they talked to Carl Douglas.
Oh.
That dude, I mean, nobody, that will have you riveted for the entire time. And I haven't even heard it yet. I just know because that dude just gives good content.
Yeah, he can tell me a bedtime story about civil rights, anything. Like, it's just a great listen to. So South Beach Sessions with Carl Douglas, everybody.
Also, check out Sarah Spain. She talked to someone from SNL. I can't think of her name right now, but it looked really funny, and I'm going to check that episode out, so should you.
That's what she said was Sarah Spain.
That is a tease, Roy, right there. You tease an episode that you don't even know the name of the person she talked to.
That is correct, but you need to listen to it anyway because it's always entertaining.
Thank you guys for joining us. Tune in next week to Dad Pod.
Dad Pod.
Wow.
Dad Pod. Ha ha ha.